Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. It's unclear if the bodies of those killed in a sightseeing plane crash in Denali National Park will be recovered. Four people were found dead in the wrecked De Havilland Beaver by a Park Service ranger Monday during a brief visit to the mountainside crash site. A fifth person was not seen but is presumed dead. Ranger Chris Erickson was lowered from a helicopter and spent about 5 minutes at the 10,500-foot site where the downed plane is resting on a snow bridge over a crevasse on a steep ridgeside. Erickson tells Alaska Public Media that returning to the site requires good weather to allow enough time to assess the potential of a recovery operation.
Really look at it critically from the perspective of, can we safely operate here? There's a lot of things that can go wrong regarding the stability of the aircraft. It's not as simple as just tie ropes to it and anchor it to the mountain. The fact that it's suspended on a crevasse bridge adds a three-dimensional element to where that aircraft can go.
Erickson says the slope is also avalanche-prone. Three backpackers were rescued from Denali National Park. Park spokeswoman Catherine Belcher says two men from California and a third from Colorado, ages 24, 59, and 66, were in the Toklat River area Monday in rainy, foggy conditions when they activated a personal locator beacon. Belcher says conditions were poor for flying and an Air National Guard helicopter was called on to help.
They were able to get to the scene and extract the three hikers at approximately 9:30 p.m. The hikers were wet and cold, and one was experiencing mild hypothermia.
The Denali backpackers weren't the only ones rescued from Alaska's backcountry this week. Alaska State Troopers report that a woman suffering a medical condition on a float trip on the Shinjek River was airlifted out by a Fort Wainwright-based helicopter crew. In another incident, a man lost in foggy conditions on a mountain near Eagle River was located by the Alaska Mountain Rescue Group and Alaska Search and Rescue Dogs. Two hunters are charged with poaching bears in Prince William Sound. Alaska State Troopers report that 41-year-old Andrew Renner and 18-year-old Owen Renner, both of Palmer, face felony and misdemeanor charges related to killing a black bear sow and her two cubs in their den. The illegal harvest occurred April 14th on Esther Island. Northern Region Alaska Wildlife Trooper Commander Captain Rex Leaf says the bears were part of a U.S. Forest Service and State Fish and Game study. Leith says hidden motion-triggered video and audio recorders at the den site recorded the illegal kill.
It shows them shoulder a rifle and taking two shots at the sow. And then the audio allows you to hear the cub shrieking in the den. And then it shows the defendants obviously realizing that there's cubs. And it shows them moving closer and firing several more shots, killing the newborn cubs.
Captain Leith says the recorders also captured the renters returning to the den site 2 days later to pick up shell casings and dispose of the dead cubs. He says the men took the sow's hide and radio collar to the Fish and Game office in Palmer and lied about what happened.
They reported that the bear had no cubs and no cubs were seen.
Leith says the charges thus far include tampering with evidence, which is a felony, but the others related to the illegal kill are misdemeanors.
In the state of Alaska, there are very few felony charges when it relates to wildlife or fishery crimes. Now, there are some felonies such as wanton waste, but in this situation, the other acts such as shooting the cubs and shooting the bears in their den, those kind of things, those are all misdemeanor based on current state law.
Leith says additional charges could be filed if new information comes forward. A truck, boat, and rifles used in the illegal kill were seized by the state. Leith says it will be up to the court to decide whether or not the property is returned to the renters. The Alaska Supreme Court yesterday ruled that certain provisions of the Yes for Salmon ballot initiative are unconstitutional. Elizabeth Harbaugh of the Alaska Energy Desk reports.
The Alaska Supreme Court's decision guarantees a big fish fight ahead. The court ruled that only two parts of the initiative are unconstitutional because they explicitly bar the state from giving some projects a permit. That goes against a section of Alaska's constitution, which says ballot initiatives can't prioritize one state resource, here fish, over others like mines and oil developments. So the court is ordering that those two provisions must be cut out. But the rest of the Yes for Salmon initiative is good to go. Stand for Salmon director Ryan Scriver is organizing the Yes for Salmon campaign, and he's satisfied with the outcome.
They have left intact the heart and soul of what we were trying to do.
Lawyers for the state, who challenged Yes for Salmon in court, are also counting this as a win. That's because they weren't arguing whether the ballot initiative is a good idea or not. They just said it violated a specific part of the Alaska Constitution. Yes for Salmon's opponents say the decision doesn't change how they feel about the initiative.
The ballot measure still is just as concerning to our group.
Katie Capozzi is the campaign manager for Stand for Alaska, a group formed to fight the initiative. Stand for Alaska is backed by the state's biggest oil, gas, and mining companies, as well as Alaska Native corporations, trade unions, and other groups. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
An ordinance before the North Star Borough Assembly tonight would create a single commission to advise fire and emergency medical response across the borough's five service areas. Fire departments consisting of staff and volunteers respond within their geographical area while appointed commissioners manage their budgets. As KiwiC's Robin reports, there's concern from some neighborhoods about going to a borough-wide management model.
Brad Paulson is the borough's emergency services manager. He has about 3 decades of experience in local fire service. He says the new ordinance would standardize fire service in the borough and improve safety and allow for public input on emergency medical services, for which there is no mechanism now. It would create one commission with representatives.
5 residents, 1 each from each borough fire service area, 2 residents with background in public safety planning or administration, 1 resident who owns and occupies residential property in the borough outside the cities of Fairbanks and North Pole, 1 resident who owns and operates a business in the borough outside of the city limits.
Paulson says the new commission would leverage borough resources for purchasing and training and ensure compatible equipment when fire departments help each other. At an assembly work session last week, he wanted people to know what it does not do.
This ordinance does not dissolve any fire service areas. This ordinance does not consolidate any fire service areas. This ordinance does not change any millage rates in any fire service area. And this ordinance does not remove any contractors or change operational fire and EMS response protocols currently in place.
But Dave Niebert says representation would be lost under the proposed ordinance. Niebert is the chair of the Steese Fire Service Area Commission, but says he's speaking as a taxpayer rather than for his commission.
Basically, you're in competition with the other departments who have different needs.
The ordinance is administrative rather than operational. Right now, the borough's fire service areas and the city of Fairbanks, city of North Pole, Fort Wainwright, and airport fire departments help each other out when they can. The Insurance Services Office, ISO, a national rating company, has given fire departments in the borough low-risk ratings over the years. That reduces insurance costs to homeowners in those fire service areas.
Part of that is the cooperation between fire service areas. It functions almost as a single system because of the cooperation between adjacent fire departments.
At the work session, some assembly members wanted to know why something that isn't broken should be fixed. Emergency Management Director Paulson says that cooperation is another argument for a borough-wide commission.
I would say operationally that we're running very well together, very, very well together, to the extent of they're working so well together, we really need to look at this regionally.
Niebert says some resistance to the change is because the fire service commissions did not give any input. They were notified by mail just last month.
We were not consulted at all. We didn't even know this was coming down the pike. They're trying to slip it in the back door.
Anna Sorensen is president of the board for Chena Goldstream Fire Service Area.
We have a lot of problems with the way that this was communicated with the fire service areas.
But she doesn't have any problem with the ordinance itself. And if it passes, there will be work to do on a combined commission to make sure Chena Goldstream is represented.
There are going to be commissioners who are not going to be residents of our service areas. It's going to be a heavy lift for us to educate them on our budget and our issues.
The ordinance is the first one up for public hearing at Thursday's Borough Assembly meeting. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And I'm Dan Bross.